My name is Vince Colonnais, sitting alongside Mary Walter on this Friday morning.
Thank you, Vince. Joining us right now is Raheem Kassam. He is the editor-in-chief of Breitbart London, also the author of No-Go Zones. You hear about those in Europe, No-Go Zones. Raheem, welcome to Mornings on the Mall. How are you this morning, sir?
Thank you for having me. Yes, just fine. Thank you.
Glad you're joining us. Want to talk about what happened in Barcelona. I have some questions here. There seem to be some unanswered questions as far as this entire attack goes. We know that there was the van that plowed into this big tourist area in Barcelona. But one of the questions I have, and maybe you can clear up, is three men have been arrested in connection with the attack. We know five have been killed. Five of terrorists have been killed. Three have been arrested. One of them is a man named Driss Okabar. He's 28 years old, and his picture was the one that was flashed all over. We're looking for this guy. This is the guy who rented the van. He turns himself in and says, my brother took my ID, my younger brother, Musa Okabar. Now, Musa, is he in custody? Do we know where he is?
Well, it's complicated at the moment, because at the beginning, as you said, we weren't quite sure whether it was Musa or Drissel we were looking for at the time. I've had both reports overnight that they do know where Musa is, but I don't believe he's in custody. I think they're aware of his general location, his geographic location, but I don't think they've actually found Musa yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the subject of your book in part and how it relates to all of this, because you write about no-go zones, and just to give people a quick sense, what is a no-go zone? What is that?
Well, a no-go zone, what typically defines a no-go zone can differ from country to country. So when I did the research for the book, I traveled all across Europe, and I even traveled to some places here in the United States. Predominantly, these neighborhoods tend to be mostly Muslim inhabited demographic neighborhoods. And in Europe, what we've seen is neighborhoods springing up that give sort of harbor to people like Musa and his brother who committed attacks like yesterday. Now, we don't know where they're from yet, but what I'm trying to say is that in Brussels, for instance, in the Molenbeek neighborhood, you would find, and the police did find, places where terror attacks were being planned out and places where the terrorists who have previously committed terrorist attacks were hiding. The very same in the northern Parisian suburbs. And you see it in neighborhoods in Sweden and in the United Kingdom as well. Sparkbrook in Birmingham is a pretty bad area too. And just this week in Birmingham, we've seen graffiti going up in one neighborhood that says no whites allowed after 9 p.m.
Okay, so these places, I'm sorry, just because these places are incubators of terror, but how do they get that way? You say they're no-go zones. That suggests that law enforcement does not patrol those areas?
Well, law enforcement finds it very, very difficult to go into some of these areas. In Sweden, the police officers won't go in their normal sort of way. They won't drive a car into this neighborhood, just two of them sitting in the car. There will typically be a large contingent of police if they ever need to enter that area. The postal services in one of these Swedish suburbs, in Rinkeby, refuse to deliver to some parts of it. It's just far too dangerous. In Aulnay-sous-Bois, when I was there in France, the buses won't stop. And in terms of, you know, how these neighborhoods got there, well, effectively, government-sponsored programs that bring people in and put them all in housing blocks and ghettoize these people effectively is where the problem starts.
All right, so let's tie it all back to Barcelona. We've got this attack that occurred, of course, last night, and this is suggestive that there's sort of a cultural tolerance going on throughout Europe, or at least one, where there's a fear that if they get into sort of the nasty questions about migration and refugees, that they'll be accused of bigotry. But actually embracing some of those questions may actually result in trying to figure out how we stop attacks like this.
Well, absolutely, and especially here in the United States, you guys have had firsthand and brilliant experience of immigration in the past, and yes, you've had communities that have ghettoized, and then the next generations tend to integrate and assimilate, and the Italians, the Irish, you know, you name it, over the course of your history. This actually isn't happening in these neighborhoods. What's happening is it's going the other way. If you look at the Pew research into this, it shows that the second and third generation of Muslims in the West are actually far more inclined towards fundamentalist and literalist interpretations of the Quran, far more inclined to believe that apostates from Islam should be killed, that drawings of Muhammad should lead to beheadings. There is a prevalence of female genital mutilation now in the West, and you're starting to see it here in the United States too. As you know, these two cases in Detroit, just outside of Detroit, in Livonia, coming up as well now. And yes, no, the questions aren't being asked, and they're not allowed to be asked. When anybody raises these questions, they're slammed as xenophobes or Islamophobes or bigots.
Right.
You know, you can have 400,000 people marching down the National Mall in Washington, D.C. to protest a president, but you can't even have 4,000 people marching against female genital mutilation. The conversation is skewed.
Well, that's multiculturalism bumping up against assimilation, and they're taking the former path. Raheem Kassam, thank you very much. The editor-in-chief of Breitbart London and the author of No Go Zones, How Sharia Law is Coming to a Neighborhood Near You. Available.
Thank you.